Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Blood and Honor. Narrated by Terence Aselford. With performances by David Coyne, Yasmin Toison, Andy Clements, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, Tim Getman, Michael John Casey, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Eric Messner, Peter Stray, Colleen Delaney, Katie Foster, Nanette Savard, Elizabeth Jernigan, Christopher Graybill, Danny Gavigan, Corey James, Joe Brack, M.B. Van Dorn, and Mort Shelby. Blood and Honor, Part 2. Jordan was getting ready for bed. He'd just finished drawing back the bedclothes and laying out a tastefully embroidered nightshirt when the dog reappeared. When he looked down, he saw the bloodhound standing at his side, waiting patiently to be noticed.
Oh, hello again.
It stared up at him with its perpetually mournful face and wagged its tail. Jordan took his hand away from his sword and grinned at the dog.
Hello, boy. Oh, he's up there, boy. So, you're back again, are you? Where have you been hiding yourself? Under the bed?
The dog lay down and rolled over on its back so Jordan could rub its stomach.
Oh, you're a good boy.
As he did so, he wondered what to do next. He'd never had a dog of his own. He'd had his horse for several years, but the two of them had quickly established a policy of live and let live and had rarely strayed from it. Jordan supposed he ought to feed the dog, but he wasn't entirely sure what bloodhounds ate or where in the suite to look for it. And then he frowned as he remembered Gawain saying the dog definitely wasn't Victor's. The prince hated dogs. Having met the prince, Jordan wasn't the least bit surprised. The dog had to belong to somebody, though. It was too well-groomed to be a stray. Perhaps it had just wandered into his room by mistake and couldn't get out. He ought to call the guards outside his door and have them remove the dog, but it was a friendly animal, and Jordan felt in need of a little friendly support. He looked up sharply. He wasn't supposed to have any visitors. The guards were under strict orders to turn everyone away until morning. He decided he'd better answer it. The caller didn't sound as though he was going to go away, and it might just be important. He looked around for the dog to get it out of sight and found it had disappeared again. Clever animal. It wouldn't do for Prince Victor to be seen being friendly with a dog. It wouldn't be in character. Jordan walked quickly out of the bedroom and over to the main door. The regent, Count William Howard, stood waiting impatiently before him, still dressed in his formal robes. Jordan shot a quick glare at the two guards for not having warned him who it was. They stared determinedly straight ahead, avoiding his eyes. Jordan supposed he couldn't blame them. It was the regent, after all.
Well, aren't you going to invite me in?
Of course, Sir Regent. My rooms are yours.
He stepped back out of the way, and the regent swept in. He looked around the room disdainfully, his gaze implying he'd seen more tastefully furnished slums. Jordan moved hesitantly forward to greet the regent. He wasn't quite sure of the right thing to do. Private audiences with the regent hadn't been covered in any of his briefings.
Would you care for a drink, Sir Regent?
Not at this hour, Victor.
Oh, then what can I do for you?
Jordan suddenly decided he was being too polite. He was, after all, a prince of the realm whose rest had been disturbed. He deliberately turned his back on the regent and walked unhurriedly over to the nearest chair. He sank down into it and draped one leg idly over the arm of the chair. The regent gave him a hard look. Jordan smiled blandly back.
I'm here to see you on a matter of some importance, Victor.
I should hope so, at this hour. Well, out with it, man. We haven't got all night. What's so important it couldn't wait till morning when my advisors could be present?
You were at court this morning. You were there when I proclaimed the right of transference. No matter what you or your advisors may believe, I assure you, it wasn't a move I made lightly. Nor was it intended as a threat to you or your brother's position. I've never made any secret of my feelings towards you or your family, but I've never allowed my personal feelings to influence my duties as regent. Red Heart needs a king. You saw what the steward uncovered at court. The Unreal is loose in the castle and growing stronger all the time. Only the king can put a stop to this by drawing on the stone. The rest of us are helpless. Victor, any king is better than none. I'm not blind to the practicalities of the situation. If anyone other than a prince of the line is declared king, a civil war is all but inevitable. People are already choosing sides. They seem to have forgotten the horrors and bloodshed that such wars mean. Thousands upon thousands would die. Not just guards and men-at-arms, but ordinary men, women, and children, too. Farms would be burned, towns gutted, rivers poisoned. I don't want that, and I'm hoping you don't.
I'll do anything I can to avoid a civil war, but you must understand that I may not have much say in the matter. If my brothers start raising armies, it will be impossible for me to stay neutral. They wouldn't allow it.
Yes, I understand. It's late and I'm tired, so I'll come straight to the point. You always used to be the most reasonable of the princes, so I'm going to appeal to your sense of honor, to your duty to the kingdom. Do you have the crown and seal?
Jordan looked at the regent blankly, while his mind worked furiously. By asking that question, the regent was openly declaring that he didn't have the crown or the seal, and he had no idea of who did have them. And by that very openness, he was also declaring the weakness of his position and his need for allies. He was asking Jordan to work with him.
I don't have the crown or the seal. And as far as I can tell, neither of my brothers has found them either.
The regent waited, but Jordan said nothing more. The silence stretched on, pregnant and uncomfortable with hidden meanings, until the regent nodded reluctantly.
I see. Thank you for being so frank with me. In return, I'll be honest with you. You won't have heard yet, but open fighting has broken out between Lewis's and Dominic's troops. My guards are doing the best to restore order, but there's a limit to what they can do, particularly since they've been spread so thin trying to contain the Unreal. Victor, it seems to me that you're bound to be drawn into the conflict sooner or later. If I were you, I'd start preparing against magical attacks. Your protective wards here are excellent, but they have their limitations, as I'm sure you're aware. I'll just say one more thing and then I'll leave. Your time in exile seems to have mellowed you somewhat. I'm glad to see it. But as regent for the kingdom, I can't stand by and allow civil war to break out in Red Heart. I will do everything in my power to support whoever eventually produces the crown and seal. And if that means having to order your brother's deaths, or yours, I'll do it. For the sake of the kingdom, Victor, don't stand against me.
Jordan was getting in over his head, and he knew it. He was in no position to commit Prince Victor to anything. He'd better talk to his advisors quickly and let them decide what to do about the regent's warnings. He felt better almost immediately now that he'd shifted the burden onto somebody else. He started for the door and then stopped suddenly. He couldn't go running to Count Roderick in the middle of the night. He was a prince. It would look very strange, not to mention suspicious. He'd be better off sending one of the guards with a message. Jordan spun around and saw that the bloodhound was back, staring fixedly at an empty corner of the room. The dog stood stiff-leggedly, its head stretched out toward the corner. Jordan's hackles rose, and a cold hand clutched at his heart. He couldn't see anything in the corner, but when he was a child, his grandmother had told him that dogs could often see ghosts where people couldn't. And Castle Midnight was supposed to be full of ghosts.
Easy, boy. What is it? What can you see?
The air before him rippled and grew hazy, and the monk appeared in the corner. The dog backed quickly away, ears pinned back. Jordan's hand dropped to the sword at his side. He wasn't sure if there was anything inside the monk's robe that he could hit with a sword, but if the monk came any closer, he was going to have a damn good try at finding out. He glared at the darkness inside the monk's cowl.
I don't recall inviting you in.
Doors and walls are no barrier to me. I bring greetings from your brother, Lewis, and a message.
All right, give me the message and then get out.
You waste your breath in threatening me. You have no authority here, actor.
Jordan's heart stumbled in mid-beat, and for a moment he thought he was going to faint. The moment passed, but he could feel his legs trembling uncontrollably. He felt as though he'd suddenly dried in the middle of a big speech and forgotten all his words.
What do you mean, actor?
He took a certain amount of pride from the calm evenness of his voice.
There are no secrets from me in Castle Midnight. You have Victor's face and body, but that's all. I've seen the real prince asleep in another room.
You said you had a message. Get on with it, messenger.
The long gray robe seemed to stir briefly, and Jordan wondered if he was pushing his luck. This was one of the most powerful sorcerers in Castle Midnight, and all he had were the flare pellets up his sleeve and a few spare smoke bombs. Jordan tried hard to think which door was the nearest, in case he needed to make a sudden exit. The monk's robe grew still again, and Jordan relaxed a little. He still kept his hand near his sword, though.
I bear this message from your brother Lewis. It's time to choose sides. Those who are not with Lewis are against him. Those who will not kneel to him are his enemies. Lewis will be king of Redheart, and any who dare stand between him and the throne will die.
Jordan waited patiently a while, and then raised an eyebrow.
Is that it? Lewis must be getting desperate. Tell him he can take his threats and stuff them. And if you ever enter my rooms uninvited again, I'll burn that mangy-looking robe of yours to cinders and then piss on the ashes. Now on your way, or I'll set my dog on you.
He turned his back on the monk and ostentatiously studied his appearance in a nearby mirror. Jordan counted to 10 slowly and then turned around. The corner was empty and the monk was gone. There was also no sign of the dog. Jordan had a sudden horrid suspicion that the monk had taken the dog with him as a kind of revenge.
Dog? Oh, you're just hiding.
He walked slowly around the room, looking under chairs and behind hanging tapestries. There was no sign of the dog anywhere.
Oh, how'd you get over there? Here, boy. Come on, come on.
He crawled under a nearby table.
Oh, ow!
Sorry, sir.
Jordan looked around and found himself face to face with a young boy, about 7 or 8 years old. He was painfully thin, with a narrow, pinched face and straight straw-colored hair. He stood awkwardly in that plaintive stance young children adopt when they know they've been caught getting into mischief. But his pale blue eyes were bright and steady, and his timid smile brought an answering smile to Jordan's lips. The boy was dressed in very conservative, somewhat old-fashioned clothes, but they looked neat enough. Hand-me-downs, thought Jordan sympathetically. We all go through it. He crawled out from under the table, got to his feet, and dusted himself off.
Hello, hello. What's your name?
Geordie. Everyone calls me Wee Geordie, 'cause I'm small for my age. Mother says I'll grow taller later on, though. Both my brothers are tall.
Well, Geordie, I'm Victor. Now, what are you doing in my chambers at this time of night? You're not really supposed to be here, are you?
Geordie bit his lower lip and looked down at his feet.
I'm lost. I'm looking for my mother. I can't find her. Have you seen her?
I don't know, lad. Can you tell me her name?
Lady Mary of Finbrook. She's ever so pretty.
I'm sure she is. But I don't think I've ever met her. I'll tell you what. I'll talk to the guards outside my door, and one of them will take you to the steward. She'll find someone to look after you while they look for your mother to tell her where you are. Is that all right?
Oh, I know Kate. She's nice.
Jordan hoped she didn't mind his dumping the boy on her. He couldn't think of anybody else. A small hand nestled trustingly into his, and Jordan gave it a reassuring squeeze. He led the boy over to the main door. The guards looked in surprise at Wee Geordie, and Jordan glared at them both impartially.
This young scamp managed to sneak in here without either of you spotting him. If you think you can stay awake long enough, I want one of you to take him to the steward and stay with him until they find his mother. Think you can manage that? Good. Because if I find out later that you just left him there on his own, I'll have you both peeling potatoes in the kitchens until your fingers turn brown. Is that clear?
Both the guards nodded emphatically, and one of them held out his hand to the boy. Geordie looked up at Jordan, and he nodded that it was all right. The boy transferred his grip to the guard's hand, and the two of them went off down the corridor. Jordan looked hard at the remaining guard.
See if you can remain alert from now on. Because if I get any more uninvited guests this evening, I'm going to be distinctly peeved with you. Got it? Good.
Jordan walked back toward his bedchamber. It had been a long day, and so far it had shown no signs of getting any shorter. He thought wistfully about the deep, soft mattress that awaited him.
Oh, you have got to be kidding me.
Jordan tapped his foot impatiently and began to seethe quietly as it became clear he was going to have to deal with whoever it was if he hoped to get any sleep that night. He strode over to the main door and jerked it open.
Now what in the world is going on?
Something about 2 feet high and dressed all in scarlet shot between his legs, scurried into his suite, and disappeared. Jordan barely had time to react before he looked up to see Damon Kaur charging straight at him, brandishing the biggest solid steel mallet that Jordan had ever seen.
Move! Shut the door! Don't let it get away!
Now hold!
Shut the door!
Jordan shut the door. When he looked around again, Kord was standing very still in the middle of the room, his mallet poised and ready to strike.
Kord!
Quiet, Your Highness. It's gone to ground.
I don't care if it's gone abroad for the holidays. What is it?
A red cap. Nasty little buggers. They hide in the wainscoting and come out at night to feed on human flesh. They're particularly fond of children's flesh.
Kord began a slow quartering of the room, checking each possible hiding place with the maximum of caution. Jordan was reminded irresistibly of his own search for the disappearing bloodhound, but had enough sense not to smile. He didn't think Kord was in the mood to appreciate the funny side.
Why a mallet? What's wrong with a good old-fashioned sword or axe?
Red caps are notoriously hard to kill, Your Highness. Fire's the only thing that'll do it for sure. That's why I chased it in here. If worst comes to worst, you can always use your fire magic to fry the little bastard. Gah! Gotcha!
That... somebody's going to pay for that.
Kord barely even registered Jordan as he rushed for the red cap. In the brief moment he had actually caught a glimpse of the thing, Jordan got an impression of an impossibly wide mouth crammed with needle-sharp teeth. The creature picked itself up from the priceless set of ceremonial plates used by Victor's grandfather in court, now ruined, and reached for one of the legs from the ceremonial table. It hefted the ironwood leg like a club and grinned nastily at Kord. Jordan watched sickly as the creature's mouth stretched almost literally from ear to ear. The red cap was disturbingly human in shape, but impossibly thin. Its arms and legs were little more than pipe cleaners, but its magical nature gave it unnatural strength and vitality. Kord's mallet hit, instead of the red cap, a glass display case full of China miniatures.
Oh, come on!
Kord hauled his mallet free of the wreckage, destroying what was left of the glass case. The red cap wielded its ironwood club.
I'll get you, demon spawn!
The table leg missed Kord and sank half its length into the wall, driven into the solid stone like a nail into wood. The red cap abandoned its weapon as it ran from Kord. A centuries-old writing table and an ornamental hat stand fell prey to Kord's mallet along the way. Still entirely unhurt, the red cap took refuge behind an overstuffed armchair. A part of Jordan's mind was busy toting up the damages, even as he drew his sword and moved forward to join Kord. His new access to Victor's memories enabled him to remember exactly how much each piece of furniture had cost originally and how difficult they would be to replace. He had a horrible suspicion Victor and Roderick would decide this was all his fault and deduct the cost from his fee. Jordan decided he'd better do something to help Kord get the red cap while there was still some furniture left. He chose his moment carefully, leapt forward, and ran the creature through with his sword. The blade punched clean through the red cap's chest and out its back. No blood ran from the wound. The red cap grabbed the edges of the blade with his tiny hands, began to pull himself along the blade toward Jordan. Jordan dropped his sword and stumbled back a step. The red cap pulled the blade out of its body and threw the sword to one side.
Stay still!
The red cap was off and running again. Kord chased the thing around and around the room while Jordan got his breath back. The red cap scuttled under chairs and over tables, hiding in every possible nook and cranny, trying always to make it to the door or to the wainscoting, but somehow Kord was always there first to drive it back. Once, Jordan would have sworn the creature actually ran up one of the walls and headed for the ceiling before Cord intercepted it. But by that time, he was so confused from trying to keep track of it that he couldn't be sure what he'd seen. All he was sure of was the continuing rising cost of damaged furnishings. Fire, thought Jordan desperately. Cord said the Redcaps hated fire. He palmed one of his flare pellets and was surprised at how few he had left. He'd have to be careful how he used them until he had a chance to make some more. He pushed the thought to the back of his mind, nicked the wax coating of the pellet, and waited for his chance. The Redcap went flying backward, right into the suite's main fireplace. The Redcap simply exploded into a dirty, smoky gas that shot up the chimney and disappeared. Cord reversed his mallet and leaned on it, grinning at Jordan.
Nicely done, Your Highness. I was wondering how long it would take you to lose your temper and blast the little swine with your fire magic. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must go. The steward needs me.
And he was out the door and gone before Jordan could think to mention the mess Cord had made of the suite. He'd seen battlefields that were less messy.
At least the bedroom door was shut. It'll give me a nice clean place to sleep.
He retrieved his sword and sheathed it, then thought about making a start about cleaning up the mess. He thought better of it.
Oh, you again.
Sorry. Forgot to ask why I was here, sire. Have there been any outbreaks of the Unreal in this part of the castle? We've had sightings practically everywhere else.
Nothing here, apart from that Redcap, of course. Kind of hard to miss that, I'd say.
No unusual visitors in the past hour or so.
Jordan decided not to mention the monk. Things were complicated enough as they were.
There was a young boy who'd got separated from his mother, but that's all. One of my guards is looking after him.
Oh, yes. There wouldn't have been Wee Geordie by any chance.
That's right. Do you know him?
In a manner of speaking.
Good. I sent him over to the steward. Maybe you can help her find the lad's mother.
I already know where she is, sire. In the castle cemetery. She and Wee Geordie have both been dead these past 200 years. You should feel honored, sire. Wee Geordie doesn't show himself to many people. He's one of the rarer ghosts in Castle Midnight. Quite well documented, though. He was 9 years old when he died. Now he spent 2 centuries wandering through the corridors, lost and alone, searching for his mother. Poor soul.
But he was real. Solid. He held my hand.
This is Castle Midnight, Your Highness.
Oh, of course. I've been away from home too long, that's all. Everything's fine here now, Cord. You can go.
Sire.
Jordan sat down heavily on the nearest intact chair, shaken at how close he'd come to giving himself away. Of course, the real Victor wouldn't have been surprised about the ghost. He'd probably grown up surrounded by the things. The great Jordan, on the other hand, had never seen a ghost before in his life and would be just as happy if he never saw another one. And yet, Wee Geordie hadn't been exactly frightening. He just seemed shy, worried, and lost. Jordan frowned. Maybe Geordie didn't know he was dead and a ghost. How could a child that age ever really understand what had happened to him? All he would know for sure was that his mother had apparently gone off and left him on his own, surrounded by strangers. Jordan shuddered, strangely touched by the young ghost's fate. 200 years. No child should have to suffer such a thing. There must be something he could do to help. Maybe the steward could do something. He couldn't afford to ask such a thing. It would be totally out of character for Victor. The prince wouldn't have given a damn if he'd met Geordie. He'd probably have put the boy out of his room on the end of his boot, in fact. Jordan stared broodingly at the wall in front of him. No, he couldn't get involved. It was too dangerous. Word would get around. Questions would be asked. But Geordie had trusted him. No one had trusted Jordan in a very long time. He frowned, his mood souring rapidly. More and more, Jordan was coming to the conclusion that he didn't like Victor at all. On the stage, he'd always played his aristocratic roles as honorable men, noble and heroic. In reality, he was finding them to be devious, treacherous, and even openly evil. Jordan caught himself. He didn't like the way his thoughts were running. He was here to do a job, not make character judgments on his employers. He'd worked for scum before in his time. After all, it was theater, and it had never bothered him as long as their money was good. At Castle Midnight, he was acting a part, nothing more, and being well paid for it. He was tired, and his head hurt. He'd think about it again in the morning. Things might seem clearer in the light of day.
What is it now?
The air tore open before him, and out of the shimmering gap stepped a man with no face. Any other time, Jordan might have been impressed. As it was, the faceless man was just another damned visitor who stood between him and his bed.
What the hell do you want?
A thin, flat wound opened at the base of the blank face to make a mouth.
I have a message for you from Prince Dominic.
Jordan watched as the wound closed and disappeared.
Out of all of the uninvited guests I've had this evening, you have got to be the most repulsive and least welcome. I can't think of a single thing Dominic might have to say that couldn't wait till morning. Now beat it, or I'll have you exorcised.
I'm not a ghost.
Keep annoying me, and that could change suddenly.
Jordan glared firmly at where he imagined the eyes should be in the blank face, but the newcomer showed no signs of being intimidated.
Oh, all right, then get on with it. But keep it short, or I'll heckle you.
Prince Dominic sends his regards. He bids me tell you that you now have 12 hours in which to leave Castle Midnight. Stay here 1 minute longer, and you will be killed. You're playing a dangerous game, actor. Whatever they're paying you, it isn't enough. Leave while you still can. This is the only warning you'll get.
The world split open and swallowed up the faceless man. Jordan closed his eyes. Did everyone in Castle Midnight know he was an actor and an imposter? Certainly, it seemed both Lewis and Dominic at least suspected the truth. Presumably, they weren't sure yet, or they'd have exposed him at court. Jordan scowled unhappily. If they did have any real proof against him, the sensible thing to do would be to get out while he still could. But if Lewis and Dominic were just guessing, his sudden departure would be all the proof they needed. They might even send a company of guards after him to drag him back to Castle Midnight to answer questions. Always assuming Victor's people didn't try to kill him for running out on them. And either way, it would mean giving up all hope of his 50,000 ducats. Jordan felt very strongly about those ducats. He felt he'd earned them. No, he was going to have to stay put, at least for the time being. Dominic's threat had to be at least partly bluff. Jordan relaxed a little as he thought it through. Roderick had assured him he was perfectly safe in the suite, and when he had to leave it, he'd have Gawain and the others to protect him. On the other hand, all that protection hadn't done much to keep out the apparently endless stream of visitors he'd had all evening. Did anybody sleep in this castle?
Oh! You have got to be kidding!
Jordan jumped to his feet and stared at the main door, his head down like a cornered stag. His hand twitched beside his sword hilt.
I don't care who it is. I don't care if you're my long-lost rich uncle from Hillsdown, a ghost looking for his missing head, or a phantom with piles. You can all go to hell. I am tired and I don't want to be disturbed. Now beat it or I'll fricassee you.
Really, Victor, is that any way to talk to your own sister?
Lady Gabrielle Howard stood in front of Jordan. He ignored her and glared at the lone guard standing outside his door.
Oh, you're not making any friends here, you know. This is not helping your career at all. If one more person comes through this door, I am going to do something extremely unpleasant, probably involving boiling oil and a funnel. All right, you're here. I take it you've got a message for me. Everyone else has. Take a seat, if you can find one.
Gabrielle looked around at the shattered furniture and raised an elegant eyebrow.
Been throwing another of your parties, Victor?
Oh. She picked up one of the overturned chairs, tested the seat carefully, then put the chair down facing Jordan and sat down on it. She smiled brightly at him and laced her fingers together in her lap.
I don't have any particular message for you, my dear. I just thought you and I should have a little chat. It's been 4 years since we last saw each other, and a great many things have changed since then.
So they have.
He sat down on his chair and smiled politely at her. A memory from Victor popped up. You call her Gabby. It's a pet name between you. You could have been very close if you hadn't both been so ambitious and competitive.
I had a visit from your husband earlier on, Gabby. He seems a solid enough sort, quite decent in his way.
He's an honest man. Father thought well of him.
What did Dad have to say about your marriage?
I don't use language like that. He came around eventually, which is more than can be said for Lewis or Dominic.
Oh, stuff them. From what I can tell, William's made a good enough regent, but he shouldn't have proclaimed the right of transference. It'll cause more problems than it solves.
Perhaps.
I like the way you took care of those unreal birds at court. It must have taken quite a bit of nerve to just stand there and trust your magic to see you through.
Thanks for noticing. People tend to forget I've got air magic in my own right. They tend to think of me either as Malcolm's daughter or William's wife.
Jordan looked at her thoughtfully.
As I recall, you were never much of one for little chats, Gabby. Why don't you just say whatever it is straight out? I've had a long day and a longer evening, and I'm really not in the mood for subtlety.
Your time in exile has sharpened your wits. I'm glad some good came of it. You want it straight? Fair enough. Our time is over, Victor. The present royal line simply isn't worthy to sit on the throne of Redheart. Lewis is degenerate, Dominic is insane, and you... To be honest, Victor, you've never really shown any interest in what being king means. It was always too much like hard work for you, and duty and honor were just words. The Unreal is stronger now than it's ever been, and it's fighting to break free from Castle Midnight. Redheart needs a strong king on the throne to hold things together and put down the Unreal. The rite of transference could give us such a king, providing you and our brothers don't interfere. I'm sure William has already told you that Lewis and Dominic have declared war on each other. Don't get involved, Victor. Their troops and my husband's guards are more or less evenly balanced, but if you and your forces were to join the fighting, there's no telling what might happen. You would almost certainly be killed, along with all your people, but the damage would have been done. Stay out of it, Victor, for all our sakes.
Jordan studied her thoughtfully. Gabrielle's face was flushed, and her eyes were burning with an almost disturbing intensity. Without knowing how or why, Jordan knew she was holding something back. Important as this obviously was to her, there was still something she wasn't telling him, something that burned beneath her calm and reasonable words with the red, sullen glow of obsession.
For all our sakes, tell me, Gabby, would it really matter to you at all if I were killed?
Perhaps. Just a little. You used to be a fairly likable sort until that bitch Elizabeth got her claws into you. And you did keep quiet when William and I first got engaged. If Father had found out we were cousins by blood, he would have banned our marriage. I couldn't have stood that. William is everything to me, and always has been. You knew about our blood, but you never said a word. We owe you one for that. But in the end, I have to be more concerned about the kingdom. A civil war is destructive enough at the best of times, but with the Unreal poised to break loose at the first opportunity, a civil war now would be madness. I need to know your answer, Victor. Never mind what you told William. Tell me the truth.
It's yours. And it's the same answer I gave your husband. I'll stay neutral if I can, but I doubt very much if Lewis and Dominic will let me. I'll have to fight sooner or later to protect my life, if not my claim to the throne.
You could always leave.
Dominic already suggested that. In fact, he said he'd kill me if I didn't.
Are you going to leave?
No.
So you learned stubbornness as well in your exile. I hope you'll reconsider your position, Victor. But knowing you, I doubt it. I'll talk to you again tomorrow. Good night.
Jordan quickly got to his feet and escorted her to the door. She nodded a brief goodbye and then left. Jordan leaned wearily against the door and wondered if he had enough strength left to barricade it. He didn't think he could stand another visitor. He shook his head and started yet again toward his bedroom door. He'd almost made it when the globe of water appeared around his head. And suddenly he was drowning. He clawed frantically at the globe, and his hands splashed freely through the water without affecting it. He staggered back and forth, mouth clamped shut to avoid breathing water, and the globe moved with him so that his head was always completely surrounded by the water. It wasn't a very large globe, only just big enough to enclose his head completely, but that was enough to kill him. Already his lungs were aching for air, and his head was growing muzzy. Soon his mouth would open despite him, and once he started trying to breathe water, he was lost. He looked desperately around him, the world rendered vague and distorted by the water before his eyes. His gaze fell on the rack of clay pipes Victor had set out for his guests, and an idea came to him. He lurched over to the rack, still somehow miraculously intact despite all the damage around it, and grabbed one of the long, slender pipes. He broke off the bowl, leaving the long, hollow tube in his hand. He slipped one end in his mouth, and the pipe was just long enough so that the other end stuck out of the water. He sucked in air through the tube, and the ache in his lungs slowly lessened. His head cleared, and some of his panic began to die away. If nothing else, he'd bought himself some thinking time. He didn't have long to come up with an answer. This was water magic, and that meant Dominic. He must be watching somehow, despite the wards. And as soon as he realized why this water spell wasn't working, all he had to do was increase the size of the globe of water, and the Grey Jordan would have given his last performance. He had to get rid of the globe. But how? He didn't have any magic. He forced himself to think calmly and logically. This was an attack by elemental magic. Certain elements canceled each other out, like fire and water. Fire, that was the answer. He palmed one of his flare pellets and crushed it in his hand. Flames roared up around his fingers, and he thrust his hand into the water surrounding his head. Jordan slumped to his knees. He should have stuck to the theater. The worst you had to worry about there was the critics. Jordan leaned back against an overturned table and enjoyed the simple luxury of breathing. It would appear Dominic had decided not to give him 12 hours after all. And yet, if Dominic had really wanted him dead, there were any number of other ways that he could have done it, most of them much more efficient. Filled his lungs with water, for example, or drained all the water from his body. Dominic might be crazy, but he wasn't stupid. Dominic's messenger, the faceless man, had known he was an actor, or at least suspected it. Perhaps they weren't sure one way or the other, and the water attack had been a test to see if he had fire magic. If they were watching, they should be thoroughly confused by now. Jordan got slowly to his feet. He supposed he should be feeling scared or angry or both, but he was just too tired. All that mattered to him now was getting some sleep. Anything else could wait till the morning.
Bed, you and I are going to have a well-deserved night together.
Oh! He flopped down on the bed, fully clothed, too worn out to even make an attempt at undressing. He stared up at the ceiling for a moment, and then his eyes slowly drifted shut.
50,000 ducats. 50,000 ducats. Oh, stuff the bloody ducats.
Prince Dominic sat alone in his private quarters, slumped elegantly in an ivory throne carved from the skull of a sea creature long since extinct. The room was dark and gloomy, lit only by a dull blue glow from the wall of water before him. Dominic stared into the endless depths with brooding, unseeing eyes. His water attack had failed, and Dominic wasn't used to failing. It had only been a simple spell, but it should have been more than enough to take care of some overambitious actor pretending to be a prince. Dominic had watched intently as the man staggered back and forth, slowly drowning. And then Victor had destroyed the spell with his fire magic. From now on, Victor would be constantly on his guard, and his death would be that much harder to arrange. Moreover, Dominic had been made to look a fool. He frowned and gestured sharply with his left hand. The air stretched and split open, and the man with no face appeared before him. He sank down onto one knee before the ivory throne and bowed his blank head.
You told me the man in my brother's apartment was an imposter. You told me you had arranged an opening in the protective wards, and that this actor had no magic of his own, but my water spell failed, dispersed by fire magic. Why did you lie to me?
The faceless man jerked silently as long hairline cracks appeared in the skin of his blank face. Blood ran sluggishly from the cracks and dripped from his chin. He raised his hands to Prince Dominic in supplication, and more blood ran from hairline cracks in his palms and fingers.
I didn't lie, sire. I swear I didn't lie to you. The imposter is a conjurer and very quick of mind.
Why didn't you tell me this before?
It didn't seem important, sire.
Blood ran down his face in a steady stream, and his unfinished features twisted in agony.
From now on, tell me everything. I'll decide what's important and what isn't. How long before you can arrange another opening in the wards?
A few hours, sire. Maybe more.
The wounds on his face slowly began to close. The last of the blood began to dry on his blank face. He remained kneeling before Dominic, head bowed.
Victor's death isn't really important. He's no threat to my position, as long as I have you to tell me his plans. And the poison will kill him soon anyway, but this actor annoys me. He has intruded into a situation where he doesn't belong, and he seeks to meddle with my life, my destiny. And the low-born scum actually has the nerve to play at being a prince. His presence in my home offends me. I could kill him easily, but that's not enough. I want him broken and publicly humiliated first.
There is a way. There is a testing scheduled for tomorrow, before the stone. A young man from one of the minor lines is laying claim to blood. Traditionally, the royal line always attends such ceremonies. Even after everything that's happened, a testing is too important to be ignored. So both you and your brothers will be expected to be there. You can use the occasion to call out the actor as an imposter. He won't dare spill his blood on the stone. He'll have been told that would kill him. So, when he refuses, everyone will know him for what he is. The use of such a double will also serve to discredit Victor and isolate him from any support in the court during whatever time he has left.
Yes, I like that. We'll do it. Make the arrangements. You have done well, my slave. You can go now.
The faceless man didn't move.
Your Highness, you know I can't leave yet.
Really? There's nothing more we need to discuss, is there?
I need you to renew the spell before I leave. The spell that keeps me alive.
Of course. I've been remiss. How could I have forgotten that?
He gestured lazily with his left hand. A great bloody wound appeared on the faceless man's chest. It was an old wound, and the edges were crusted with dried blood. But at the base of the deep cut, the heart muscle could clearly be seen, pumping wetly.
Oh, very nasty wound, my friend. I think I judged the blow rather well. Deep enough to cause a mortal hurt, but not so deep as to kill you outright. Without my magic, you'd bleed to death within moments. But as it is, you may live forever. Or at least for as long as I need to. Restore.
A blinding light crackled fiercely around the faceless man. He twisted and writhed in the grip of flames that did not consume him. And then the light was suddenly gone.
Oh, don't be so dramatic. Get up and be quiet.
The faceless man rose shakily to his feet. The wound on his chest had disappeared again. Dominic smiled.
I've given you another day of life, slave. Perhaps tomorrow I'll give you another day, if you please me. Now get out of here.
The faceless man simply turned and walked through the portal. Dominic leaned back in his throne and ran one hand caressingly over the smooth ridge of bone that formed his armrest. Soon the real throne would be his, and all of Redheart. And then the land would see some changes. All the kingdom would bow down to him, to his wishes and his whims. Everyone and everything would be his, to do with as he pleased. He wasn't sure yet what he wanted to do with them, but no doubt he'd think of something. And if nothing else, at least he wouldn't be so horribly bored all the time. He scowled at his wall of water. He usually found the subtle changes of light soothing, but today nothing seemed able to comfort him. For as long as Dominic could remember, he'd always been bored. As a prince, he'd soon discovered that nothing was really barred to him. Every action, every sensation could be explored and experienced. But when things come without cost or effort, they quickly lose their flavor. Dominic had tried everything in his time to keep his frenziedly active brain occupied. He'd tried sex and politics and magic, and all of them had failed him. His mind worked frantically on, never quiet, never letting him rest until he felt like screaming. Boredom gnawed at him like a cancer or a hunger that could never be satisfied. To feed that hunger, to stave off the boredom that tormented him night and day to the edge of hysteria, he would sacrifice anything and anyone. All that was left to him now, his only hope, was the stone and the power it promised. Power over the unreal. The endless change and novelty of the unreal. His bedroom door suddenly swung open, and Dominic looked around to see Elizabeth standing in the doorway. She was wearing a clinging silky nightdress and a fur wrap that, between them, revealed as much as they hid. Dominic nodded politely to her and looked back at the wall of water.
Oh, you've been brooding again, haven't you, my love? Staring into the water and getting all depressed. Come to bed, my dear, and I'll make the darkness go away for a while.
Dominic rose slowly from the huge skull throne.
Do you love me, Elizabeth? Really love me?
Of course, Dominic.
That's nice.
There had been a time when he'd thought she might be enough to keep away the darkness. Certainly, he'd never wanted anything before as much as he'd wanted her. But in the end, even she began to pall on him, and the never-ending horror of boredom crept back over him. He kept her with him anyway, because he had a use for her, and it wasn't the use she thought. He went to her smiling, and she only thought she knew what he was smiling about. Catriona Taggart ran down the corridor at full tilt, struggling to keep up with the guard leading the way. This was going to be a bad one, she could tell. She hadn't been able to get much sense out of the guard when he'd come to summon her, but from his pale face and stuttering voice, she knew it had to be something really nasty. It took a lot to upset a castle midnight guard. Taggart fought for breath as she ran, and wondered, not for the first time, why she hadn't resigned long ago. She'd never planned on being steward. Her father had been the previous steward, and he'd spent years training an apprentice. Then the Dark Horse had broken loose in the North Passage. Her father had been lamed, and the apprentice died. Catriona had started out helping her father, just as an excuse to keep an eye on him while his injuries healed. But somehow, she became his apprentice in spite of herself. Being steward of Castle Midnight was a hard job, even at the most peaceful of times. It killed her father when he was still in his early 50s. There was a bitter irony in that. All the terrors and creatures he faced, and he finally died at the dinner table of a heart attack. That was 7 years ago, and Taggart was only now beginning to realize that her father's early death had left her dangerously unprepared. She just wasn't experienced enough to handle this level of emergency. But with her father gone, there was no one else left for her to turn to. She had to be good enough, because there wasn't anyone else. Cord tried to help, bless his heart, but he wasn't what you'd call bright. If you couldn't hit it or stab it, he was mostly lost for an alternative. Taggart almost smiled, but then she realized the guard was leading her into the south wing. Up until now, the worst outbreaks of the unreal had all been in the north. If it had established a foothold in the south as well, that could mean the beginning of the end. She couldn't fight on two fronts at once. Taggart silently cursed King Malcolm's murderer yet again for having dropped her in this mess. She'd been kept so busy since the king's death that she hadn't even been able to hunt down the murderer. Strictly speaking, that was security's province rather than hers, but she'd never trusted Brian DeGrange, Gius or no Gius. And with the king's death, she was cut off from the stone, which meant she had to rely on her own high magic. Which meant she had no time for anything but the job she'd grown to hate. She ran on after the guard, her sword slapping painfully against her leg. Her breathing was growing harsh and ragged, but she was damned if she'd slow down before the guard did. She had an image to maintain. Besides, sometimes a few minutes' difference in getting to the scene was all that stood between saving someone from the unreal and standing helplessly by as they died horribly. She finally rounded a corner and stumbled to a halt as her guide leaned against the corridor wall and gasped for breath. He gestured weakly at the group of guards ahead.
Thank you.
She felt a little better as she saw the captain in charge was Matthew Doyle. She'd worked with him before. He knew his job. He didn't panic easily, and his men trusted him implicitly. He didn't bathe often enough, but you couldn't have everything. Doyle left his squad of worried-looking guards and stepped forward to greet her. He was a tall, wiry man in his late 30s, with a shock of dark curly hair and a perpetually thoughtful expression. His uniform was scruffy. He'd been on report for insubordination more times than any other guard in the castle, and he was resigned to never rising any higher in rank than captain. If he cared about that, Taggart had never seen evidence of it.
You're slowing down, Kate. Too much good living among the swells.
One of these days, we're going to have to organize a better system. There's got to be an easier way. Or at least one that doesn't involve so much running. I must have lost 10 pounds in the past few days.
Oh, is our steward out of shape?
Stick it, Doyle. I could outrun you any day of the week. It's good to see you, Matt. What's been happening here?
Doyle nodded at a closed door halfway down the corridor. His guards were keeping it under close observation while being very careful not to get too close to it.
That's the problem. We've been trying to open that door with everything from crowbars to curses, and the damn thing won't budge an inch. From the smell of it, something very nasty's going on behind it.
Taggart nodded and walked over to inspect the door. Doyle stayed close beside her. She stood before the door and sniffed the air cautiously. There was a sharp, acidic smell, like game meat that had been left to spoil too long. She looked closely at the door, being careful not to touch it, and then frowned as she saw that the door's edges had grown into its surroundings. The wood flowed seamlessly into the stonework as though they'd always been one piece. She glanced at Doyle.
All right. It's tricky enough, I'll grant you. But a good axe will open it fast enough. What's the emergency? What's so special about this door that I had to be called in?
This is Count Penhaligon's new chambers. He and his entire family were at home when the doorway became sealed. We haven't been able to get an answer out of any of them since.
Oh, great. The king's own cousin and next in line to be regent if anything happens to Count William.
Afraid so. You understand our rush.
I take it you've sent for a sanctuary, Matt?
Sure, but most of them are busy. Laughing Boy's dealing with the sewers. Sweet Jenny is guarding the kitchens, and Mother Donna's still stuck in the musician's gallery.
Right.
She closed her eyes for a moment. She couldn't remember when she'd last felt this tired. When she opened her eyes again, the door was still sealed.
I think we can forget about Mother Donna. You can't hurry a mass exorcism. How about Grey Davy?
Oh, I sent word, but you know what he's like.
I do. He's good at his job.
When we can find him.
Quite. All right, Matt, it looks like we'll have to do this the hard way. Have your men draw their swords and then fall back in a semicircle facing the door. If anything gets past me, kill it. I don't care what it looks like. If it gets a chance, it'll kill you. So make sure you get it first. And Matt, if that smell is what I think it is, we can forget about the Penhaligons. If they're lucky, they died quickly. Now let's get on with it. Stay alert and we might manage to contain this yet.
All right, you heard the steward. Get in position.
She scowled unhappily at the unresponsive door. More and more, she didn't like the look of the sealed doorway. It looked too planned for her liking. In the past, the unreal had always seemed random and undisciplined. But of late, the outbreaks had seemed to be following a pattern, almost as though the unreal was somehow alive and aware. Tiger took a deep breath and focused her will, calling on the high magic she'd mastered under her father's patient teaching. She reached for the light within her, a roaring, blinding light that was her mind and her soul and so much more, and brought a little of it out into the world. vivid white balefire crackled around her right hand, spitting and flaring, and slowly formed itself into a glowing sword. Taggart gripped the hilt firmly, feeling the familiar cold pulse of life beat against her palm and fingers. She was vaguely aware of Doyle and his men watching her silently. She didn't need to see their faces to know that some of them were afraid of her. She didn't blame them. Some of the things she could do frightened her, too. She swung her sword of light against the closed door. The balefire bit deep into the thick wood, cutting clean through and out again. A vile, choking smell poured from the jagged rent in the wood, and Taggart fell back a step in spite of herself. The guards screwed up their faces as the smell hit them, and one or two stirred unhappily, but they all stood their ground.
Damn it!
She widened the opening until she had a hole big enough to look through. She dismissed her sword, but kept the unfocused balefire crackling around her hand as she waited to see if anything was going to come flying or oozing out of the opening she'd made. Nothing did. Not a whisper of sound came from the room beyond the door. There was only the smell, thick and corrupt and nauseating. Taggart conjured up a small ball of light and sent it gliding through the jagged opening and into the room beyond. She dismissed her balefire and stepped cautiously forward to peer through the hole in the door. She was still careful not to touch the door and did her best to breathe only through her mouth. The room was dark, lit only by the glowing ball. The walls were a glistening, wet pink, and so was the low-domed ceiling. Slender purple veins traced disturbing patterns in the pink. The room was half full of a dark, viscous liquid that lapped sluggishly against the rosy walls. Bones floated on the surface. They might have been human once, but already they were losing shape and definition as the liquid dissolved them. Taggart stepped back from the door. The ball of light winked out, and darkness returned to the room.
They're dead. They're all dead.
She'd known it from the first moment she recognized the smell, but somehow she'd still hoped she might be wrong. She always hoped. It was all she had left to keep her sane.
What happened in there? And what the hell is that stench?
The room ate them. And I don't suppose the inside of your stomach smells any better. We're going to need a sanctuary. Putting this right would take all the high magic I have. Let the sanctuary take care of it.
Of course, my dear. That's what sanctuaries are for.
Grey Davy was a man of average height, but more than a little on the scrawny side. He always looked as though he could do with a good meal to put some meat on his bones. His face was drawn and gaunt and seemed to fall naturally into apologetic lines, as though he felt he should be apologizing for his very existence. His clothes were well cut, but old and faded. Taggart always had the feeling on meeting Davy that he was covered with cobwebs. He was supposed to be in his early 40s, but he looked old beyond his years, as though drained by having to struggle against a consistently unfriendly world. And yet he was still a sanctuary, and a power burned steadily beneath his gray exterior. Taggart felt better just for seeing him, and one by one, Doyle and his guards sighed and relaxed a little as a feeling of peace swept over them. The lights seemed to burn a little more brightly, and the shadows were just shadows again. Even the smell didn't seem as bad. In Castle Midnight, there were always a few places and a few people that remained unaffected by the unreal. Places of ease and comfort, people of good cheer and better company. Sanctuaries against the darkness of the world, where reality remained safe and constant. Grey Davy was a sanctuary. Taggart bowed respectfully to him.
Got a nasty one here, Davy. 4 dead that we know of, maybe more. See if you can put the room right, at least.
I don't know what the world's coming to, Kate. I'd swear the whole damned castle's coming apart at the seams. And now 4 more dead. How many is that now?
Too many. And it'll get worse before it gets better.
It wouldn't surprise me. If I had any sense, I'd have left here years ago. I've always said this place was unstable. But whoever listens to us? We're just the poor sods who have to clean up the mess afterward. Still, I'm here now. Let's see what I can do. Get those guards out of the way, Kate. There's a dear. They're distracting me.
You heard the man, Doyle.
Stuart, are you sure?
If Grey Davy needs our help, we're in worse shape than we imagined. Step back and give him some room.
Right. All right, men.
Davy studied the sealed door. No one took any offense at Davy's attitude. It was just the way he was. They could tell he didn't really mean it, mostly. Davy placed his hands flat against the door and pushed. The wood gave reluctantly under the pressure, stretching unnaturally like taffy. The door hung inward from one hinge, and the stench was suddenly worse. Davy didn't even seem to notice it. He glanced into the dark room and showed a little frown.
Light!
Taggart's ball of light cast its glow into the room as Grey Davy walked in. The silvery light revealed the bones floating in the dark liquid. The liquid heaved and swelled, lapping against the glistening walls. But some invisible barrier kept the liquid back from spilling out into the corridor. The smooth white bones spun slowly on the surface as they dissolved. The dark liquid surged back from Grey Davy, its unreality repelled by his presence. The pink walls stirred uneasily. Davy's scowl deepened, and his walk slowed, as though he was contending against some unseen presence. He hunched his shoulders, tucked his chin in, and pressed forward. The room changed. The purple veins faded away as the walls and ceiling became solid and sensible stone again, and the dark liquid vanished. Scattered across an ordinary, everyday room were some smoothly rounded shapes that had once been furniture, and various odd bits of metal too tough to dissolve. Only a few bones were left, none in any condition to be identified. The vile smell lingered on the overly warm air like a fleeting memory of a bad dream. Grey Davy looked around the room once, and then turned and walked back into the corridor. His face was pale, but he carried himself as though this was just another day's work. Taggart smiled at him fondly. Davy was an irritating bastard when all was said and done, but you couldn't help liking him. He reminded Taggart of her father, but then Grey Davy reminded everyone of their father. He kept the darkness at bay and always seemed to know what to do for the best. His company was like a cool breeze on a hot summer's day. Bracing, but comforting.
Yeah, that's it. End of problem, for the time being. If I were you, though, I'd nail that door shut, barricade it, and declare this whole corridor out of bounds until things get back to normal. Once I'm gone and out of range, I wouldn't put it past that room to revert back again. The Unreal's getting sneaky these days, not to mention stronger and more determined. The sooner we've a king on the throne, and you can get to the stone again, the better I'll like it. I don't like the way things feel around here.
He glanced briefly at the broken door hanging from its single hinge.
And pity about the Penhaligans. I never liked him, but she was a pleasant sort. Always a smile and a cheery word. I suppose there's no chance the children weren't there when it happened. No, I thought not. Ah, well, can't stop and chat. I've got work to do.
He turned abruptly on his heel and stalked off down the corridor. Taggart and the guards watched him go in a respectful silence. The corridor seemed colder and darker without him.
Sometimes I wonder about him.
You're not alone.
Doyle glanced uneasily at the broken door.
Was he right about the room? Could it revert?
I don't know, but I think we'll seal it up anyway, just in case. Take care of it, Matt. And you'd better send word to the regent that Count Penhaligon and his family are dead.
Of course.
Taggart looked up and down the long corridor and chewed on the insides of her cheeks. Davy had wanted the whole corridor closed, but that would mean uprooting a great many important people, just on the off chance that something nasty might happen in the future. The courtiers would not take kindly to that. In theory, as steward, she outranked everyone, not actually of royal blood, but she had enough sense not to push that too hard in practice. Of course, things were different now.
Start evacuating this corridor, Matt. I want everyone moved out of here as fast as possible. No exemptions, no excuses. Then set guards at each end of the corridor to stand watch. No one is allowed in or out, unless accompanied by a sanctuary.
The people here aren't going to like that.
Isn't it a pity?
She grinned at Doyle.
All those wealthy courtiers and nobles having to put up with a little inconvenience like us common folk.
Every now and again, she got a little back for every time a noble had sneered at her or her father for not having any blood. All in the line of duty, of course.